بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على عبده ورسوله الأمين نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. أما بعد، السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We move on and we're still in the chapter that deals with marriage from the series on عمدة الأحكام. Hadith number 312. Who will read that for us? Okay, Akhi, go ahead.
Anas bin Malik radiallahu anhu reported, when anyone who has already a wife marries a virgin, he should stay with her for 7 nights and then begin to divide. And if he marries someone who is not a virgin, he should stay with her for 3 nights and then begins to divide. Abu Qulaba said, if I wish, I can say that Anas directly traced it to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
Okay, jazakallah khair. Now, the hadith is again differentiating between two types of women, a virgin and a woman who was previously married. And Abu Qulabah is the narrator who reported it to Anas ibn Malik. And he said in the end of the hadith that if I wished, I would have said that Anas had directly attributed it to the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. This means that we have two types of hadith. This is not the issue. But in mustalah al-hadith, in the sciences of hadith, we have two types of hadith. Hadith marfu' and hadith mawquf. What is the marfu' and what is the mawquf? The marfu' is the hadith that the Prophet said it, alayhi salatu wasalam. And the mawquf is the hadith that the companion said it. It's not the words of the Prophet, alayhi salatu wasalam. So in this hadith, Anas narrates that it is part of the sunnah. Now, he didn't say that the Prophet said so and so and so, alayhi salatu wasalam. So saying it is the sunnah from a companion means that this is attributed to the Prophet, alayhi salatu wasalam. He's the one who tells us what the sunnah is and what is not. So what is the ruling? The ruling is, if you marry a woman, but you have a wife or more, we know that part of being fair is to divide the nights equally. So if I have a wife and then I married a second wife, I have to divide a night here, a night there, or a week here, a week there, or in some extreme cases, a month here and a month there, as in the case of someone who travels between two cities and he has two houses. So he spends a month in Mecca, and then he goes to his wife in Medina and spends another month there. He has to be equal. But in regards to the wedding night or what follows, the Prophet is telling us, alayhi salatu wasalam, because the second wife has rights and she has to be happy in her marriage. So the Prophet says, alayhi salatu wasalam, if the second wife is not a virgin, a widowed or a divorcee, in this case, I, as a newlywed, may stay with her 3 nights. So my first wife would not see me for 3 nights. But if she's a virgin, I may stay with her for 7 nights. And that's in the very beginning of the marriage. A Muslim's relationship with his wife, he's always kind to his wife. He's always helping with the chores in the house. He's always giving her presents and trying to make her the happiest woman on earth. Likewise, the wife is doing the same with the husband. This is the ideal, and this is a sign of a person's commitment to his religion. If he does not have this in Islam, then he's not a proper Muslim, unfortunately. So this is how the Prophet ﷺ divided it. 3 days for a previously married woman and 7 days and nights for a woman who was not married before. And the difference is obvious. She, as a virgin, she wants to be happy in these 7 days, enjoy her new life and get to know her husband more. A previously married woman is not entitled or not deserving because she knew men before that through legitimate marriage. So she knows how to get acquainted with her new husband, inshallah. And then it goes back to normal. One day here, one day there, depending on the agreement. Moving on to the following hadith, hadith number 313.
Narrated by Ibn Abbas رضي الله تعالى عنه, reported that Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم said, if anyone amongst you intend to have intercourse with his wife, he should say, in the name of Allah, O Allah, protect us against the Satan and keep away the Satan from what you have bestowed upon us. If a child was ordained for them, Satan will never be able to do any harm to him.
Okay, this hadith is part of the etiquettes of intercourse or intimacy. And the Prophet says, alayhi salatu wasalam, that one must say this supplication, this dua, and the scholars have different opinions regarding the last statement, which says that Satan would not be or will never be able to do any harm for him or to him. And we should take it as it is, instead of going into many details by saying that Satan would not cast upon this person any plague, because the plague is a disease and it is the cause of the jinn, as in the hadith. So at-ta'un, or the plague, is caused by the jinn, by the devils. So one would say, okay, so whoever says this dua, the jinn will not be able to do anything bad for him. Others say, though, whoever says this dua, then the child would be preserved from shaitan's whispering, etc. But whatever he would initiate, it would be from his own side. There are so many interpretations, and it might be the safest thing to just believe in it as it is. Now, the dua is said only by the man, not by the wife. And the dua is clear. And the beauty of Islam is that everything you do, you are connected to Allah Azza wa Jal. There is dua when you go out of your house. There is dua when you ride your car. There is dua when you enter the marketplace. There is dua when you enter the toilets to relieve yourself. There is dua when you come out, before you eat, after you eat, before you go to bed, when you wake up in the middle of the night, when you wake up in the morning. So many things that are actually, I would not say brainwashing you, it's heart washing you. It is washing and cleansing your heart with dhikr of Allah Azza wa Jal. And that is why when you find someone always and constantly remembering Allah and mentioning Allah's name, you'll find him to be fearing Allah, always doing what he's supposed to do, being honest, being practicing. And when you find someone all the time singing and listening to music and far away, finding him heedless and neglecting remembering Allah, you'd find him easier and closer to sin. Do you agree with that? This is normal. This is human nature. The more you are connected to Allah, the further you are from sin. That is why if someone has it in his system that he fasts Mondays and Thursdays every week, you will find him lesser and lesser from falling into sin than those who do not fast. Why? Because twice a week he fasts, so whenever he sees something haram, he says, astaghfirullah. Whenever someone turns something music, he says, astaghfirullah. He doesn't listen. After a while, this affects his system. Even if he's not fasting, he will always stay away from haram things. So this dua, which is a beautiful dua, tells us that if you do this, if you say it with conviction and in belief in what Allah Azza wa Jal has promised you and the Prophet has given you the glad tidings of, and there are no obstacles and you say it with conviction, then this would happen inshallah, and Allah would protect your offspring by this dua. Do you have any questions? Okay.
Assalamu alaikum.
Salaam Allah.
Is walima fard?
Is walima fard? Is having the feast or the food when getting married a must? No, it is not. It is highly recommended, but we cannot say it is a must. And we will get a hadith of Abdurrahman ibn Auf, may Allah be pleased with him, when the Prophet ordered him, alayhi salatu salam, to have a feast or to slaughter a sheep and invite people to it. But the most authentic opinion that it is highly recommended, it is not mandatory.
The dua which is mentioned in the hadith 313, should we read in Arabic or any other language we know?
A good question, and I will answer your question inshallah after the break, so stay tuned.